Let me come back to immigration in a moment because our listeners will want to hear from you on that. But is the poor state of the coalition, the two parties there, the Liberals and the Nationals, the spark that is giving her the current boom? I think that the polling suggests that's the case.
Yeah, look, I think we need to be, we need to have a vision on the centre-right. I mean, this is a centre-right issue. Sure, some Labor voters are bleeding to One Nation as well, but we've got to have a strong vision for the centre-right side of politics. And if we don't, someone will fill that vacuum, and I think that's what's been happening. So I'm confident we're building a vision. We will have a vision. We'll have policies. It's going to take some time.
The line from Angus Taylor, and I've heard you say it as well on immigration, is that the numbers are too high and the standards are too low. Give me a sense of where you might make changes. And would you agree that a tiny majority of people who are coming here are not interested in signing up to the Australian way of life? I think it would be a small portion, wouldn't it? Someone moving from across the world?
Yeah, it's a small portion of people. But I think, you know, fundamentally, if you come to Australia, you've got to believe in the Australian vision. You know, we've got a set of values, the fair go, respect for your neighbours, working hard, and parliamentary democracy. You know, we debate with each other, but we don't kill each other if we disagree. Mm. So that's kind of the basic covenant, I think, is what we'll call it. Mm. Not a contract. It's more than a contract. And so there are people who, you know, have come over here and, you know, they're quite resistant to our culture. And we saw that expressed in, you know, really stark terms, murderous terms, last year at Bondi. I wrote a Substack subsequently in, I think, late January, early February. People can go read it. And it's about my upbringing in Asheville, Sydney. Very multicultural community. My father was a faith leader. He was a Presbyterian minister. And he had a Chinese church, a Korean church, a Western Samoan church, and an English church. And so I grew up in that multicultural context. Hmm. And everyone sort of had their cultural quirks, but everyone was united around a common faith. And so I think, you know, we can make these, you know, we can work together as a community. I want to make it very clear, race has nothing to do with it. There are people who are, you know, expressing racist views in the immigration debate. This is not about race. It's about values.
Politicians?
Look, you go online, you'll see a lot of racism,
sure,
I think.
Sure.
You know, I've come to love other cultures, other people. And, you know, I'll just say it so your listeners know, I am a Christian, and so I believe everyone, you know, is made in God's image and should be treated with respect, regardless of who they are, their sex, their gender, their sexuality, their faith, whatever it is. That's my starting point. So look, I'm optimistic we can make this work, but we do have to insist on a set of values, and we do have to insist on things like English because we want everyone participating in our democracy.
Isn't the difficult part of that debate that we're conflating questions about the immigration program and how it should be carefully managed with two terrorists who killed 15 people? I see a real problem there that people of migrant backgrounds aren't the same as terrorists at Bondi Beach.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is why it's a really tough conversation. I mean, my wife's a migrant for a start. And I got a text from one of my former staffers who, you know, has a Hong Kongese Singaporean background. And, you know, he was telling me how his son experienced racism on a work site. Hmm. Because he's got that Chinese heritage. He was very frustrated. He's, you know, born here. And, you know, we have to be really careful about these debates because, you know, there are people who want to just take it to a racist place straight away. Mm. So I take your point. I'm not going to say there's an easy solution here, but the numbers are too high and it's important that we insist on standards. Otherwise, our democracy won't function.
Okay, we're nearly out of time. I just want to merge our last two topics together a little bit. How should the Liberals treat One Nation given that they and I think Pauline Hanson is pretty clear in her record on this, they play in some of those spaces that we've been talking about. They try and divide people for political outcomes. Should the Liberals and Nationals seek to marginalise her? Should the major parties try and keep One Nation as a minor force in politics, keep them out of the mainstream?
Well, I'll say this. I'm a Liberal. I want to win the next election. And if One Nation wants to pick a fight with us, well, we're going to fight hard. I don't want to make enemies where I don't have to, but certainly, you know, we have a vision for the country. We're going to build that vision And it's a contest. So we're gonna fight hard to win the next election. And, you know, there are people who are currently parking their preference with One Nation. We want to win those people back. But then there's also an element of One Nation who just want to tear us down. So, you know, hey, politics is a duel. I'm up for a wrestle.
Very good, very good. Okay, well, our traditional last question on the pod is to ask people about their life outside politics. You've talked a bit about your reading, which is so interesting. Tell us how you relax, how you turn off when you get home after a busy sitting fortnight back to WA.
Well, a lot of the time I get home and I've got to adjust the time zone, and my kids don't really care about that. So I get home, my wife Ruth, she basically is a single parent for half the year. I've got a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old.
Hard job for a political spouse.
It is, and I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Ruth. So I want to thank her and acknowledge everything she does. She's got my back. But look, I just try and tune into my kids' world. So, you know, I've watched quite a few cartoons recently. My son goes from one sporting obsession to the next. I end up going to watch my daughter's basketball games. So I just try and come back in and not disrupt the routine that my wife has established. And in the middle, I'll try and read as well.
What's on your reading list at the moment?
What am I reading at the moment? To be honest, I'm chipping my way through the Two Towers.
Great.
And I've just read Hal Brand's book, The Eurasian Century, which is on politics. But yeah, I think I'm you know, to keep my mind supple, I try and get into novels, you know, and broaden my knowledge of human experience.
How interesting. Well, Andrew Hastie, it's been great to have you on the pod. Thank you for answering so many interesting questions.
Hey, pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the pod today. You can always write to us at australianpolitics@theguardian.com. We love hearing from listeners, and we're very open to your suggestions on who you'd like to hear from in future episodes. Alison Chan is away this week. The executive producer of this episode was Karishma Luthria. I'm Tom McElroy, and we'll see you next week.